This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Bob Edwards. Today is Memorial Day, a day to honor those killed in battle. NPR's Joseph Shapiro reports history shows that public sympathy for wounded veterans often depends on the nature of their injuries.
Last month, when President George Bush wanted to visit wounded soldiers, his first stop was the campus of red brick buildings and green lawns at the Walter Reed Army Medical Center in Washington. Afterwards, the president expressed his admiration.
It's an amazing thing when you see a person wounded, sitting there in a wheelchair or bound up in bandages or these different-looking metal things sticking out of them to hold them together. A young man look you in the eye and say, I can't wait to get back to my unit.
Most of those the president met had wounds to their feet, hands, arms, and legs. They'd avoided more serious injury thanks to a new generation of body armor that was worn in Iraq. The nature of battlefield injuries has changed over time, but the visible marks of war have always signified the heroic warrior. Across the gated campus of Walter Reed is a museum of military medical history. One part of the collection bears witness to the terrible injuries of Civil War veterans. Photographs of amputations, even severed arms and legs. During the Civil War, doctors treated 7 million cases of disease, hundreds of thousands of wounds, and 30,000 amputations.
I'm Michael Rohde, archivist of the National Museum of Health and Medicine. We're in front of the Civil War exhibit, and some of the pieces here would have been seen by visitors to the museum in the 1860s and 1870s.
The original museum was a tribute to the sacrifice of disabled veterans. It opened on the second floor of Ford's Theater. One guidebook of the time called it a fitting memorial to President Abraham Lincoln, who'd been shot and killed there just 2 years before. Back then, it was called the Army Medical Museum. Several thousand amputated limbs, numbered and arranged by body part, filled row upon row of glass cases. There were remains of soldiers from both the North and South. That museum helped reconcile a divided nation, much the way years later another popular war monument in Washington, the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Wall, became a place for healing. Back in 19th century Washington, large numbers of tourists came to the Medical Museum to view the gory displays. And Rohde says,
the soldiers themselves occasionally came to the museum and looked up either friends or their own body parts.
The rakish Civil War General Dan Sickles sent his own leg bone to the museum in a small coffin. He'd come to see it every year on the anniversary of his amputation. Scientists and surgeons came, too, to see what a successful amputation or infected bone looked like. The sheer number of wounded veterans led to major advances in surgery. Today, the museum is part of the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology. Rohde points to a long piece of bone behind the glass. This is a femur bone amputated from a Union Army private named Julius Fabry. It's got sharp, angry spikes.
You can see Fabry's leg is badly, badly infected. This is the actual bone, and instead of being a smooth bone, it's got all of these growths and protuberances from it, which are the osteomyelitis.
Above the bone is a photograph of Julius Fabry. He looks grimly at the camera. His pant leg is missing to show his amputation at the hip. The museum has hundreds of these photographs. To our eyes today, these depictions of mutilated bodies seem invasive, but at the time, they helped turn wounded veterans into national icons. Michael Rohde.
The idea of privacy at the time wasn't the way we have it now. Museum curators would write to people and ask them to send photographs of their injury in, and they would. And those photographs would be published with their name, where they were living. It was probably in some ways seen as an honorable record of your service.
The visibility of wounded veterans also made the country more aware and accepting of physical disability. At Ford's Theater, the Medical Museum shared space with another important office, the Pension Office. It's probably no coincidence that in the years that the wounds of soldiers were on display, there was a huge expansion of pensions for all Civil War veterans.
Disabled veterans were often pioneers on the frontiers of the welfare system.
Historian David Gerber says sympathy for disabled Civil War veterans helped create something remarkable, a framework for the modern welfare state. He says how much money a veteran got was determined by the extent of his disability.
Which really, in a sense, developed ways of looking at the human body regulating it and administering the consequences of what happens to bodies in a way that would become more general for citizens in the 20th century.
As welfare expanded, visible changes to the body became the basis for deciding who got help. Assistance went to the physically frail, old and young, and to poor pregnant women. But war also causes another type of damage, one that isn't so visible. During the Civil War, only a little attention was paid to psychological injuries. Back then, those soldiers were said to be suffering from nostalgia or homesickness. Not until the conflicts of the 20th century did society even begin to understand that war caused devastating psychological damage as well.
These are the casualties of the spirit, the troubled in mind, men who are damaged emotionally.
For years, the Medical Museum at Walter Reed was one of the few places to have a copy of a controversial World War II training film called Let There Be Light. It shows psychiatrists treating soldiers returning from war with mental illness.
One of the most important procedures is group psychotherapy. Here, under the psychiatrist's guidance, the patient learns to understand something of the basic causes of his distress.
Hollywood director John Huston made the documentary for the U.S. Army, but for 35 years, says museum archivist Michael Rohde, the Army refused to let it be shown.
The patients break down on screen. The men are crying uncontrollably, or else they have strange tics or weird behavior. It's just, I think it's part of the overall American uncomfortableness with mental disease as opposed to physical disease.
In the film, men arrive at the psychiatric hospital unable to speak, walk, or talk without crying. By the end of their treatment, they are cured. A psychiatrist in Army fatigues reassures the men that their injuries are different from conventional mental disorders. Theirs, he tries to argue, are only temporary.
Unfortunately, most of you fellows have gone through some very severe stresses in the Army. If a civilian, the average civilian, were subjected to similar stresses, he undoubtedly would have developed the same type of nervous condition that most of you fellows developed. All of us have our so-called breaking point.
The film treats the soldiers sympathetically, but only after their illnesses go away. While Americans provided some notable support and social programs for veterans with lifelong disabilities, those with long-term psychological injuries were treated with suspicion. And that hasn't changed much since World War II. Vietnam veterans with post-traumatic stress disorder had to fight to get government treatment. And historian David Gerber says the same has been true for veterans with mysterious illnesses they attribute to battlefield toxins, including those exposed to Agent Orange in Vietnam and veterans who developed chronic illnesses after the first Gulf War.
We're comfortable with the visual impairments that we can see and that we can conceptualize in the mind. Neuropsychiatric illness, like post-traumatic stress disorder, makes people very uncomfortable to the extent that it suggests the possibility of emotional instability, which leads to danger and social disorder. And I think it's much harder for people to grasp that as a disability as opposed to simply a threat to the public.
When presidents visit the war wounded, they still greet only those with physical injuries. Joseph Shapiro, NPR News, Washington.